We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello once again, this is Rich Wilson with another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
This week, Comedy Central have provided us with a luxury meeting room. I know, get on that. For a chat with the wonderful Jen Brister.
Hello, Rich
nice
Wilson.
Nice one for coming down.
Oh, thank you.
My How are pleasure. Your boys? How are they? How old are they?
They are now four.
Jesus, that's yeah. quick.
Well, yeah, I mean, I tell you, there were points that it did not feel fucking quick, mate. Let me tell you. People always say that stuff to you, don't they? I mean, you know you've got kids, but
yeah.
they say, oh, this bit flies by.
Yeah.
You're like, sometimes. No, it doesn't, mate. Not when you're in it and your day is 22 no. hours long. It does not fly by. This is interminable.
It's later on when they're grown up like mine are, 21 yeah. and 27, and that's when you go, oh, that went quick.
Yeah,
but at the
you've
time,
forgotten.
Yeah,
you've forgotten the
woods,
dark,
mate.
Dark days, mate. Bleak days where you haven't slept for.
You're hanging off the cot, just going fucking sleep.
Just weeping,
yeah.
weeping on your knees. Yeah. But thankfully, I think those dark days are over. But now we've got when they come into bed with you at like 1:30 in the morning,
yeah.
and even though they're tiny still, they take up the entire effing bed.
Oh man, they're not.
They go like they start vertical, don't they? Like so, we're all lying side by side, and then very quickly they're horizontal. Yeah. Just kicking you in the yeah. kidneys for like 8 hours.
There isn't any yeah. spatial awareness, is there? They don't give a shit.
They don't give a fuck. They're empathy vacuums. They don't give a shit. They're basically sociopaths until they're like six, aren't they?
You have to kind of mould them.
Yeah.
You kind of go, no, don't do that, darling. No, don't do that. Not like that.
And what did Mama say? You've got to speak in the third person, which makes you sound like a prick. Mama said no. You'd never do that in any other situation. Can you imagine if I came in and went, well, Jen said. Like, who's Jen? Aren't you Jen? What are we talking about?
You're going into a Costa with Jen would like.
Yeah, Jen would like to say. Mate,
have you a call them darling through gritted teeth? Darling.
Oh, honestly, you... Because I remember when I was a kid, like some of the things my kids say to me, I feel like one of those abused waiters, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Get me this, I want that. If I spoke to my mum like that, I would have got a clip round the ear.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or she would have given me the look that said, you're going to get a clip round the ear, and yep. so you would shut up. But what have I got in my back pocket? Naughty step. They're like, fuck you. I just get up off the step. What are you going to do about it? And I'm like, fucking, what am I going to do?
Well, this is it. Now we're in this generation where we've looked back and gone, that's not right. That's you can't be smacking your kids and you can't be doing this, you can't be doing that. But then, like you say, what do we do? Because sometimes words just aren't enough. And
honestly, sometimes you know. I just have to like find, I just have to find the thing that I'm like, I know you want this, and then I just take
yeah,
it away
right.
from them. And then that kind of works. But this is a generation of parenting, which I suppose I am part of, and I try, and I can catch myself and I think, come on, don't do that. But we ask our kids questions. Do you know, like, my mum never asked me anything.
No.
She just said, you are doing this. She's never like, now, like, darling, would you like fish fingers or spaghetti bolognese? Darling, would you like to go holiday in Cornwall or the south of France? Mummy's got to vote. Should she leave? Should she remain? I mean, my mum would be like, you know, here's your dinner. And I'd be like, I don't like it. And she'd just say, you do like it. You like it. And that was the end of it. And you could just get on with it. You wouldn't be able to, like, I don't know. It's a different type. It's a different way of parenting now. And there are huge positives to it.
Yes, absolutely.
In that I think we're taking a lot more time to really listen to our children and, you know, and empathise. I think that's great. You know, demonstrating empathy to your children is hugely important. Yeah. I think especially to young boys. But on the other hand, I mean, we're just like,
they get away with murder.
They get away with fucking murder, yeah.
Do you get up to Tunbridge Wells a lot? I know I said earlier I don't say much. Do you get up to... I'm from Tunbridge Wells, so...
I gig up there, yeah. And that is Yummy Mummy A-Go-Go, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling Rich about Yummy Mummy story last week. I do yoga, obviously, in Tunbridge Wells.
Of course you do. Hot yoga, of course you do.
Absolutely.
In
so
your
Yummy
speedos.
Mummy there, talking about her daughter to another friend, saying, of course, Lila's having terrible trouble at the moment. She's having night terrors, that's it. They don't have nightmares. Having night terrors at the moment. And their friend said, oh no, what's that about? Well, last night it was about Brexit.
Oh my God!
We're going skiing next week and she's worried her passport won't be accepted. Only in fucking
I didn't have a passport until 1998.
Look, take yourself out and shoot your kid in the head and then shoot yourself in the face.
You're not coming back to Tunbridge Wells now, are you?
We talk about the snowflake generation and all of that, and that kind of winds me up a little bit, because what we're actually saying is that a lot of young people who are really engaged and who are really sensitive and who are really trying to, you know, use empathy in a way that actually we should, you know, not congratulate them, but we should support them, and we should, you know, be advocating that for ourselves as well. But the other side of it is like, I mean, come on, just get a spine.
Get a grip, mate.
Get a grip. Yeah. You know, there's a bit of that. It's a bit of a grip.
Look, we've said this before on other podcasts, and we're in the middle of this massive overcorrection. So everyone's engaged now, but everyone's too engaged, do you know what I mean? So it'll level out, I imagine.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of people going, political correctness gone mad. And I think political correctness is a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing.
No, of course not.
But I do think we have to, like, manage our own sensitivity, you know, and there are certain things that we can be overly sensitive about and just sort of like... I mean, I think as comedians, we don't really get offended. I don't remember the last time I was particularly offended by anything. Things wind me up.
Yeah.
You know, like when someone says that person did that joke and it really offended me, and I'm like, well, it didn't offend me. I mean, it irritated me. I thought it was a lazy joke. I thought it was a shit joke, and I didn't think it was funny. And I hope that the audience would reflect that in the fact that they stared at him or her and was like, what are you going on about?
Yeah, but it wasn't offence.
I didn't take offence to it.
No.
And I think, you know, people get angry or upset about things, like, you know, people get offended by a joke, but then, you know, like, I do a lot of support for Frankie Boyle. People are like, I can't believe you can work for a bloke that said jokes like blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, A, I don't get offended by jokes, and nothing he said has ever offended me. And B, if you're offended by a joke about a disabled person, why are you not offended by austerity? So, I don't know, I think you've just got to pick your battles a bit better. I don't know. But the kids, in answer to your question, my two boys are lovely, and they're both 4 years of age, so they're twin boys, and they are the best thing that's ever happened to me by far. And I desperately wanted a girl. And now I realise I've got two boys. I'm like, what would I have done with a girl? Because I'm one of four. I've got three brothers.
Wow.
And all I know is, like, boys' games.
Yeah, of course.
That's all I know. So if I'd had to, like, do crafts and... Well, they do like crafts, but... I mean, do you know what I mean? If I had to...
Stereotypical girl stuff.
I don't know. If I didn't have tomboys, I'd be like, oh, I don't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
But, it's a really good... They've just been great. I mean,
Because your mum, I've only ever, your mum seems quite like a strong, powerful woman.
Very dominant woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's very matriarchal is how I describe her. in our house, yeah. You know, given that it was like four, you know, men and me and my mum, my mum was definitely the one on top of everything. And literally on top of all of us, including my dad. So, yeah.
There seems to be a lot of that back there. We spoke to Michael Smiley and he said the same thing, like, even though like, men went to work, women were at home with the kids, women were in charge, like they ruled the home and they were, you know what I mean? And it sounds like your mum was quite...
Yeah, my dad thought he did.
Yeah.
And my mum, to a degree, let him think he did, but he didn't.
No.
There was nothing that was going on in the house that she hadn't either agreed on or organised or was the person that was, you know, was the one that sort of instigated it or initiated it. So, you know... my dad, I mean, I don't really like talking about him that much, but he's, you know, he's very imperfect human, but he was like, I suppose, emotionally quite absent, you know, and so my mum had to sort of fill in those gaps so that we didn't notice it so much, you know. And I think, you know, I think when people talk about, is it bad to have two mums or should a, you know, especially my boys, should they have a dad? I just think, but probably what's worse is having a father that doesn't for a bloke.
Give a shit,
that doesn't really give a shit, and that is emotionally absent, and is like, you know, and doesn't gives a really bad, I don't know, idea of what it means to be a man. You know, I think my brothers really struggled about their identity as men as they got older because they were like, "Am I going to be like you? Because I don't want to be like you because you're a complete prick." So, like, for my kids, I think it's much better that if they have two mums and then they have blokes around them, like my brothers or my partner's brother, and you know, and our mates, and that they get their male really positive role models from really good men. Yeah. You know, that we. That we have approved. They're like, yeah, you can enter. You are a good influence. And we're really lucky that we've got such, you know, we have a lot of, you know, really good blokes that they can sort of hang out with.
Course.
Unfortunately, not as often as we'd like. You know, people got lives, but I think there's a lot of fear and prejudice around gay parents.
Yeah, well, it's new really in the grand scheme of things, isn't it? In, you know.
It is in terms of being visible, but it's I suppose not new.
No.
In that I know a few people who've got gay mums, maybe not gay dads. It's a lot more visible and I think that's a really positive thing.
Oh god, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't, you know, your sexuality is, it's irrelevant. Who gives a shit?
But people do.
I was going to say to you, this is what blows my mind. That we're still having these conversations about teaching LGBT in schools,
and you're like, school, yeah,
for fuck's sake.
I mean, 20 years after Section 28, and we're still having these conversations. Yeah. It is debilitating sometimes, as you know, if you're gay, that you're like, oh god, do we have to have this conversation? And then Question Time puts it out as a question.
Yeah,
it's like,
do we
think parents, you know, gay parents should?
Yeah.
And you're like, don't put that question out, because then that actually says that this is a legitimate debate that we should be having. I mean, it was fantastic that the audience just went, what are you talking about?
But the
fact that the BBC thought that was okay is what annoyed me, because people were like, what are you upset about? The people were like, were fine about it, and they were like,
the fact that it's
but I was like, but that's the BBC, and also the BBC are then also kind of like ignoring their LGBT employees as well, you know, and the whole thing with being a gay parent, particularly two mums with two boys, there is a fear about gay parenting, because being gay is all about sex.
Yeah.
It's so, and also because you're gay, you're already a deviant because you're deviating from whatever the norm is.
Yeah.
And on top of that, your sex life is weird and different. And I don't want my kids to know about your sex life. And it's like, well, why?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think I'm genuinely having that conversation with my children? I'm like, oh, kids, come over here. We'll have a chat with mum about, listen, if you want to know why mum and I have got short nails, here's why. You know, like, we're not having that conversation with our children,
not, no.
You know, like, and I mean, basically, to be able to go into schools and say, gay people exist.
Yeah.
There are different kinds of relationships. You might know a parent, you might know a friend of yours might have two mums, a friend of yours might have two dads. If they don't, just know that you might meet someone with two mums or two dads and just know that that is perfectly normal. Those are the conversations you're having at primary school.
Yeah.
And at secondary school, if you're going to be teaching sex, you should be teaching about all kinds of sex.
Absolutely.
And I'm sorry if that upsets people, but if they don't hear about it in school, they're only going to go on fucking Pornhub.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, and that's where they get... I mean, I don't want my... Oh, at some point, I want to have a conversation about sex with my children. Obviously, not now. They're four. But I don't want... You know, I want to be able to say to them... Do you know what I mean? You're going to be looking at porn, and I want you to know not every woman likes it in her ear hole. You know, it's... You know, not every hole's a goal, my love.
And it is amazing.
Have a conversation with her, and she'll tell you what she likes.
I was talking to someone the other day. I've had it three times, actually, with men, talking about sex, and they were talking about coming elsewhere other than, you know, in the vagina. And I was just like, why do you want to do it on there? And they're like, well, have you not done it? Like, it was on the face. And I'm like,
oh no.
I'm like, why do you want to do it on there? And like, well, why don't you? I'm like, because it's fucking weird. I've never ever in my life ever thought, oh yeah, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, I care and respect you so much. I'm gonna cheese on your face.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I was just blown away by
it's a power
their reaction
thing.
To it.
Yeah, it's a means of, it's almost like they can't piss on their partner's leg in public to stake their territory, so they do it in the privacy of their own home. I mean, whatever the reason is, it's not a respectful thing to do. And I mean, you know, you could argue that she enjoys it. I mean, I'm the last person to be having this conversation with as a gay woman, to be honest. You know.
Yeah.
But I'm just.
It's only like the people that I've spoken to and have said that they're a certain kind of man. They're a stereotypical bloke.
Insecure bloke.
Yeah. It's not, like, for want of a better phrase, it's not all men. There's other men that I know that obviously they don't do that at all. But there is a stereotype. And when I hear stuff like all men should do this and all men should do that, and you go, hey, you know, hang on a minute, we're not all doing that. We're not all monsters. We are, you know.
Well, if men all were monsters, women would literally not be able to leave the house.
No.
You know, the fact of the matter is that women know that. And the idea that when you talk about something like feminism with men, and you want to say, if I say I want to teach my two sons to be feminists, it's not because I want them to be like, I want you to feel... I want you to feel uncomfortable and on the back foot every day of your life. It's what I want them to learn is that feminism is will benefit them.
Yes.
And that feminism is something, like basically what I would say is that any ideology, which feminism is an ideology, that is about equality or anything that is moving towards equality, if it doesn't include everybody, then it's not equal rights, is it?
We're not
working on equal rights if we're not working for everyone. And the idea that feminism, which is moving towards equality, means that it wants to somehow subjugate men as a means of women, you know, achieving not equality but, you know, getting the upper hand in order to seek some kind of like revenge is bullshit. The idea is that, you know, capitalism and the patriarchy don't. On the whole, benefit some men, but don't benefit most men.
Yeah.
And feminism and you know, basically looking at the way we interact as human beings and the way we, you know, run our governments and run our economy means that we can, you know, instead of it being about the individual, you know, it will be about all of us. And why you've got men jizzing in women's faces is because they've been made to feel that they're not meeting whatever that patriarchal ideal is of a man, and so that the only way they can do it is in the privacy of their own home jizzing on their girlfriend's face, you know. And I think, you know, and that creates this kind of toxicity, which is, you know, that term toxic masculinity does come, I think, from a patriarchal system which says that any man that again deviates from what we understand masculinity to be is not really a man. You're not the right kind of man,
and
you know, that alpha male who's actually emotionally not very intelligent and quite stunted as a human being, that's what you should be aspiring to. And I think a lot of men are going, but that makes me feel really sad.
Yeah, absolutely. The reaction that I got, like I said, when I turned around and said, I've never done that, I've never wanted to do that, was just disbelief. They were like, well, what's wrong with you? Why don't you? And I'm like, Because I'm not that kind of person.
That's come directly from the porn industry, though, that image, isn't it? Because yeah. obviously, somebody ejaculating and it being hidden from camera shot in yeah. a natural way, there's nothing, you know, that could have been faked or whatever. You need some sort of flamboyant ta-da, don't you?
Yeah.
So then...
What's it called? I want to say kaplunk. It's not that. What is it? What's it when there's like loads of men?
Bukkake. Bukkake party.
Is it bukkake? Oh, I mean,
it sounds horrendous.
But I do think like
I get annoyed when I get it on myself.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake,
mate. Keep it on your crispy tissue for heaven's sake.
Sorry, Jen, this took a turn. I do apologize.
Yeah, mate. Oh, I thought, get a lesbian in.
We'll get a lesbian in, we'll talk about banging.
Yeah, come on, you know what it's like.
Oi, oi.
Oi, oi. No, but I do think that there is, again, it's talking about having a dialogue about this sort of stuff makes people really angry, and it makes people very divisive. It's very divisive, and yeah. we live in really divisive times whereby if you are having a conversation with somebody where you go, I don't actually agree with everything that you're saying, but oh, what are you fucking talking about? Yeah. Like, Twitter is a perfect place
for that. Oh, God,
yeah. And so when you're talking about something like, as contentious as saying that the patriarchy even exists, which a lot of people would deny,
well, yeah,
that it's
recently,
systemic,
yeah.
you know. Yeah, well, you were saying that this bloke was like,
yeah, someone said, really, it doesn't exist. And you're like, well, it might be different now, but it's still around, isn't it? It's still, you know, we're making changes, but we're not making enough changes.
Well, I mean, fucking hell. you know, that is somebody steeped in privilege, because if you can't, then that's the problem with when you have privilege, is you can't see your own privilege. Much the same that I don't know what my own privilege is as a slightly off-white woman, you know, like, if I'm talking about, and I don't blame men when they don't get it.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I don't necessarily get everything when it comes to race. You know, I get that wrong. I get it wrong because I'm not a woman of colour. I'm not black. No. You know, and so I don't know what it's like to be a black woman.
No.
And so when, you know, when I talk about feminism, it never occurred to me that intersectionality was important, because that black women were having a different experience and that white feminism was excluding black women.
Yeah, right.
So does that mean that I'm a bad person? No, it just means that my own privilege has blinded me to those sort of conversations. And so when we get angry with men for not knowing, it's like, well, that kind of, it doesn't really help us.
No.
I think we just got to keep the dialogue open. And the only thing I would say to men who are like, I'm a feminist, which is great if you think you're a feminist, is just wait.
Mm.
And we'll let you know when it's your turn to talk. In the same way that if I'm going to be going into a Black Lives Matter meeting, I'm not going to be like, guys, I think I've got an opinion here. It's like, well, do you know what? Maybe keep your opinion to yourself, because we're talking.
Yeah.
And it's just about listening for now. And do you know what? I think eventually, all that listening, then we'll all be able to have a conversation together. It's just at this point right now where we are, men just need to listen to women, and women need to allow men in so they can even listen.
Yeah, true.
And
this is why this podcast sort of stemmed from that. And it's not just me interviewing people, it's me learning as well. I've learned so much from the people I've spoken to. Because when privilege was mentioned, like white man privilege, I was like, I'm not privileged, I'm skint. I'm renting a house. But then you go, hang on a minute. Now, wait a minute. Now, I can drive a car after 10 p.m. I'm not worried about getting pulled over by the old Bill.
Yeah.
Things like that. And you go, oh, no, oh shit, yeah, that's...
I mean, there's loads of systemic privilege that you receive as a white man that you're not even aware of.
No.
And privilege is complex because, of course, you're talking along the lines of race, gender, sexuality, you know, whether or not you're cisgendered or trans, whether or not you're, what colour of your skin. Yeah. So all of these things, privilege is really complex because, you know, there is going to be, you know, white, there's going to be lots of white men who aren't as privileged as, you know, half, you know, some black women who are, you know, in senior positions of, you know, whatever, within the, I don't know, whatever positions that they have, or, you know, that have money, that have power. But ultimately, those women still systemically don't have the same privilege as that white man.
That's right, yeah.
But you have to sort of take into consideration lots of different things. Privilege is a hugely complex issue, and there is nothing more annoying than somebody telling you to check your own privilege. Because you're like, of course you get defensive. Oh, fuck you. You know, I've worked really hard.
Yeah.
And it's like, of course you've worked really hard, but... we're all working hard, mate, and maybe you got a leg up. You didn't even know it.
No.
Because how could you? Because you just benefit day to day from the moment you were born from all of these systemic privileges that you have as a white middle class man, for example. Yeah. I'm talking about you, I'm just talking about this random bloke. When I had a conversation, and I can't remember, somebody said that, you know, everyone was saying, check your privilege. Somebody said that to me, I'd nearly lamp them. I was just like, fuck off, check your fucking privilege, you bell. But actually, it did make me think. It was like, no, you're, you know, that was obnoxious what you said, but you're right. And, and all of that is just about, it's very difficult because it always comes down to one thing. It comes down to empathy. Putting yourself in that person's shoes and imagining what it might be like to be them. You know, like in comedy, right now, it's, I don't know, I'm laughing. it's because I've heard this conversation so many times. There are certain men on the circuit who are absolutely livid when a woman gets a break. She's taking my place.
She's
taking your place?
your place,
she's taking. Oh, that's interesting.
There's a lot of that. I've heard it myself, and there's a lot of guys going, we've just done it because they're women. You know, I don't think it works like that. They're not just putting them on just because they're women.
And you know what? Even if that is true, there are lots of people that have been gone on because they're men, and women haven't been gone on because they're women. So if it's flipped around the other way, if it's gone 180 degrees and we're now getting that same privilege, good.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I don't think that is the case.
No.
I think, you know, there are certain things I might be able to take advantage of being a gay woman right now that might get me a chance to get on the telly once, but let me tell you, it doesn't get me on the telly twice.
No, you've still got to hold your own when you're up there.
I've still got to hustle,
prove yourself. Yeah.
Prove myself. And every time I get on, if I've got to be head and shoulders better than most people in order to be even considered viable to get on telly again.
Yeah.
The idea, and I did a TED talk about it, and the idea is that a lot of the time people, whoever, you know, I'm talking about women as well, but whether it be about gender, sexuality, whatever, you know, your identity generally, people think that if someone else gets something, that it's been taken away from them.
Yes.
You know, the idea that men are like, you know, if we have any sort of positive discrimination, she's taking my job. No, you have been benefiting from this for, you know, generations, and you've been sitting on the back of women and people of colour and disabled people and, you know, trans people forever. And now, if they get a leg up, what we're just trying to do is level the playing field.
Yes.
And to use an analogy that I use in my own TED talk was, I'm not taking a piece of your pie.
No.
You're just handing back my piece of pie
that
you took from me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what it is. And just trying to have that, trying to get people to understand that it's gonna take a long time.
Yeah. Well, I had that conversation with, I was talking to Tiff Stevenson about it. We were just saying about, because a lot of men are going, it wasn't me, I was just going along and I was just doing my thing, and now I've been told I can't do that anymore, and women are taking, and I was talking to Tiff about it, and she's like, no, you just have to, men have to just, like you say, be more inclusive, don't just sit back and go, right, this is all my, I deserve this, and you've got, as like women have always had to do, men have now got to prove themselves worthy, do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to put the work in. You can't just sit back and go, well, I'm just going to fucking bloke, so I'm just going to have it. I'm just obvious.
Well, it's obvious I'm going to have it. And also, you know, if you got given those, if you got given those opportunities like 15 years ago, like a lot of these blokes in the circuit are now moaning.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get those opportunities 15 years ago. You were on the telly then. Maybe you're not on the telly now, but I'm on the, I've got, two TV credits? Kind of fucking calm down, mate.
Yeah.
It's hardly like I'm taking over the world.
Well, there's a lot of that where they think they're owed it because they've been doing it long enough.
But it's not a case of doing it long enough. It's like, I work really hard to turn over new material.
Yeah.
I work really hard to create other projects. I work really hard to make sure that people just don't see me as a circuit comedian. And it did not happen overnight. And, you know, I mean, on the whole, I would say that men on the circuit are really aware of that.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a minority of people.
Of
obviously, generally, my friends on the circuit are like really happy for me. And then, those blokes don't think like that.
No.
But there is a percentage of them, and it's oh, those pricks are like, just wind your neck in, mate.
Well, like I say, they've been doing it 30 odd years, and they just go, well,
but you've been doing the same 20 for 15 years. Maybe write, go to Edinburgh, write a new show. Maybe don't do that joke about that kid that you say is three. I know he's 28. You know when you've got a three-year-old? Mate, you are...
Yeah,
if you've got
doing?
A three-year-old at your age, what's going on? You know?
Yeah, you're right. But there has to be, because there are a lot of men that aren't doing what we do, but they're now feeling that, you know, they don't know about privilege and they don't know about what you said. They've just been going on living their life, and now all of a sudden they're being told, well, yeah, you can fuck off now. We're taking over. And so there's a lot of men that are feeling they don't know what to do.
But that's why I think the conversation isn't, then we're not having our conversation then.
Yeah.
Because if we're having a conversation, then we know that that isn't the case. I don't want to live in a world where my boys are being told to fuck off out of the conversation. Yeah. I want them to be pulled into it so they understand what's going on and so that they get it and so that they're like behind it.
Yeah.
And also, I want them to know that they will benefit from it. That having it to living in an equal society benefits them.
Yeah.
And actually getting rid of that idea of toxic masculinity and saying, you know, like, the idea that men aren't allowed to communicate their feelings or that men aren't allowed to cry. I mean, what is that? That's just bollocks, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Cry if you want to cry. Talk about how you feel. It's a really great valve and it really helps with mental health.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, you've got these blokes that go around trolling women and, you know, they're like, you know, every time a woman is successful or does something, they sit in their underpants shitting themselves and going, oh, you know, I'll rape you, you cunt. You know, you're like, well, look, you know, these men are... feel marginalised, they feel excluded because they're not part of the patriarchy, they're not benefiting from the patriarchy because they're not seen as the alpha men, and they're seeing that they feel like, oh, it's women, these women, these harpies banging on about equality, they're trying to take my rights away. Actually, that isn't the problem. The problem is that you're living in a system where you can't be you.
Yeah.
Where you as a man are seen as less than.
Yeah.
You know, which is just, you know, where we need to be able to see men as a, you know, on a, like we, hopefully, like we're starting to see women where we're not all like, we expect women to be, you know, I don't know, big tits and, you know.
Stereotypical.
Whatever the stereotype is. I mean, I don't know. God. I mean, I'm as a gay woman, I've like totally tried to remove myself from most of this crap. But, you know, I think that's the conversation we want to be having with blokes and just say, look, I don't want you to be excluded. I want you to be included. And if you're included, I just want you to just kind of try to see it from my perspective.
Yeah, exactly that.
In much the same way that I want to be able to do the same for, you know, when people are talking about race. And try to understand institutional racism in this country and try to understand the fact that we are a racist country. And, you know, because I've had conversations where I've literally been in like three or four white people and we've all been going, the great thing about Britain is it's not racist. And I'm like,
what are you talking about?
Hell, we are four white people who know nothing about race.
No one looks at a Union Jack. I certainly don't. I've said this on something else. If I walk past a house and there's a Union Jack hanging on the front of
shame.
It. I don't go, look at them, so patriotic. I go, I'm not going anywhere near that house because I bet they're cunts.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's probably, if someone's listening to this and you've got a Union Jack on the front of your house, you're not a cunt, not talking about you, but you know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
you know?
For sure. Or the St. George flag. I mean, I'm like, what's your deal?
Yeah, and it's like, why? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, what's that message about?
Yeah, would you have egg and chips every day for your tea and...
Oh, God.
You know, you've got pure PG tips in your veins.
You're like Anglo-Saxon to the core, are you, mate? Of course you are.
Yeah, those people, that toxic, again, that toxic sort of element to human beings actually scares me. And where I live in Lee, there's two trains to get home that you can get. There's one that goes through Basildon, and there's one that goes around the edges, goes through Tilbury and all that. And that one that goes through Tilbury is awful. It's like the last train at night, and
I've gone home from Lee a couple of times.
Yeah, it's fucking violent.
Fights kick off, and
I'm not, you know, I'm a. If you look at me and hear me talking, I sound like a geezer. But even I sit there going, I can't. This is horrible.
Yeah,
I might just get a cab from here. I can't stand it. It terrifies me.
I don't know. It's like there's a pack mentality, isn't there, sometimes? Not just with men, I think with women. I mean, any stand-up comedian will tell you that some of the worst audiences are packs of women together on a hen do.
Yeah.
And that just makes people behave so badly. I don't know if it's a mixture of booze and testosterone. I'm talking about the women here. I don't know what it is, but...
It's booze and it's trying to... I don't know, there's a subconscious trying to impress each other.
Yeah, or, yeah.
Be the, I don't know, it's weird, isn't it? When human beings get together.
It is, it's, I don't know, it's weird.
But it's a life I've not really, I had it in my life. I'm from that, you know, working class sort of, that sort of place, but I never really, it never really spoke to me that, I've only ever been on one stag do, and it was awful. You know, it's, that life isn't, I just don't connect with it at all.
Well, it just feels limiting.
Yeah.
You just feel like if I'm going to hang out with you, this is going to be quite limiting for me in terms of what I can communicate with you, what we're going to talk about and what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So I think I'll just steer clear of you. Do you know what I mean? And, you know...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I don't know. When I think about my sons, we live in Brighton, you know.
Yeah.
But and everyone's like, oh, Brighton, it's just like, you know, really couscous and, you know, fava beans. It's not. It's like, you know, Brighton has got one of the poorest estates in the country. And, you know, the parts of Brighton which really, there's a food bank that never has enough food.
Yeah, right.
Right? The Brighton and Hove food bank. It just never has enough.
Wow.
So that will give you an indication that, you know, I've created a ghetto for my partner and I, we've ghettoized ourselves there in a way because we feel like it is more liberal, but we're also acutely aware of, you know, just in White Hawk, which is not far from where we live, is hugely impoverished. And there is a lot still of homophobia and racism and quite sort of limiting views about things because there are young people there that don't share my privilege.
No.
You know, that's when I have to go, I've got way more privilege than pretty much every white bloke on that estate.
Yeah, true.
So it's all very well me sitting here going, it's privilege and empathy, but like, if you've got fuck all and you can't pay your bills and you can't feed your children and you can't get a job, then it's all kind of moot, really. And so the issue is really it comes from the fucking government we vote in and from what we do from the grassroots upwards and from, like, you know, trying to create a fairer society. It's all very well writing a fucking Edinburgh show about it, but it doesn't change anything.
And,
you know, it's got to come from government. And we are so, as a nation, we are so divided, and Brexit has really highlighted that division that I don't feel like these conversations can happen anymore. Oh God, I'm acutely aware this is supposed to be a comedy podcast.
No, it's not
really
at all.
Brought,
it isn't. No,
I've
no,
really
it
brought
isn't.
The vibe down.
This is exactly, it's all about having a chat.
Yeah, I'll edit in a laughter track.
Please edit it,
We're going to have a break for some tap dancing.
What? Who's laughing at that bit?
yeah. This country's fucked. But you're right, you're absolutely right on all counts, and it's, But the government aren't, you know, they're not willing to. They're not willing to, are they?
We don't have an opposition.
No. God, no. There's nothing. There's not one person in government where I go, yeah, that's the person.
No.
That's the person who's going to get us out of this shit. They're all
self-serving, fucking ideologically fucking just like void.
And that's us in a privileged position thinking that. Imagine what, like you've just said, it's someone else that doesn't have any money, doesn't have any, you know, they're scrimping and scraping trying to find money to buy sanitary products or just feed their kids,
just,
you know.
Feed your kids.
Yeah.
You know, the kids going to school, you know, I was reading an article that was in, I think it was a broadsheet, so probably The Guardian, I don't think The Times gives a shit, talking about child poverty.
Yeah.
And they were like, one of the places where children are turning up the most with not being fed over the weekend is Brighton and Hove. What? And I was like, are you kidding me?
Wow.
Like, I just had, like, which is again, you know, talking about privilege, going, well, that's my privilege, not even knowing about.
Yeah.
About that as being a problem in my middle class bubble. And I think we're all in those middle class. If you live in Islington, you can be like, rah, you know, Angel, Upper Street, having a wonderful time. But you don't have to look that far in the borough of Islington to be like, there's real poverty.
Yeah.
There's real poverty. And, you know, because we don't have a government that gives a shit, we kind of, I mean, I don't want to talk about the big society because that sounds like some fucking kind of conservative bullshit. But until we get a government that gives a shit about people, we kind of do need to look out for one another. And if that means donating to your local food bank or keeping an eye on your neighbours or finding out if your kids go to school, finding out if there's a kid that doesn't have shit, you know, making donations at not just at Christmas, but...
Yeah.
You know, all year round, I think that's positive. But I just think, I don't know, Brexit is like... Have you got any mates that voted to leave?
I know a few people that voted to leave.
Okay, yes. So I know a few people who voted to leave. And I was talking to a mate of mine and he's got a really close friend who voted to leave. And they will not talk to each other.
Oh, wow.
He's like, I can't talk to him. And I will never speak to him again. And I was like... I was like, mate, it's not worth it.
No.
Brexit isn't worth that.
No,
Brexit
no,
isn't
no.
worth losing a mate over.
No.
And rightly or wrongly, whether they voted to leave or voted to remain, wherever, you know, he made that decision because he believed it was right for the country.
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't think most people that voted to leave were like, I mean, of course there were some complete racist cunts, most people that voted to leave did it because they thought, you know, Europe is holding us back, Europe is taking our money, Europe is making Britain, you know, what is it, a vassal state, for fuck's sake, whatever it is that Farage was banging on about.
Yeah.
But Brexit's made us think that, we don't have anything in common anymore.
No, I know. And it is that. There's a few people that I know, there's a couple of people that I know that, you know, they're very well-to-do and they're very middle class and they voted to leave for those very reasons. But there is a majority of people that I know to be racist and St. George's flags and all that. And you know, they put Tommy Robinson stuff up on Facebook and...
Yeah, I mean, they're vile.
You know, like, go fuck yourself.
You can't communicate with those people. I mean, you know, I've got a mate of mine and she was talking about her family. And she's great. She's really forward-thinking. She's lovely. But, like, all of her family voted to leave. And they're all, like, Tommy Robinson supporters.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know what to do with them. She goes, I can't... She goes... I'm not in a Facebook echo chamber like you are, or, you know, whatever, where all of my mates are saying the same thing. She goes, I've got a window into the other side.
Yeah,
and she goes, let me tell you, it is terrifying.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah. And people, talking about people who are, you can't even have a conversation with people about people who are gay with these people because they're just, can't get their heads around it.
I don't gig in Kent anymore.
No, see.
And people are like, you know, if I say that, people are like, why are you being mean about Kent? Kent's beautiful. And I'm like, oh, look, Kent is beautiful.
Yeah.
There's lots of lovely things about Kent. You know, Tunbridge Wells, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, but I cannot gig there because I can't deal with the homophobia.
No.
I cannot go on stage again and have someone call me a dyke or someone send me a really abusive email. I don't need it.
No.
If you're a woman... and you're gay or black or Muslim or different in any trans or whatever, then good luck in Kent if you're performing. Because even if like you've got the majority, if you've got 80% of the crowd on side and you've got 20% that aren't, those 20% are very vocal.
Yeah.
Especially if they're in a little group.
They can't bear you to go home knowing that they don't fucking hate your guts.
No.
She can't leave and not know that I fucking think she's a disgrace. You know, she needs to know.
I've got, oi!
You know, sometimes in comedy you can do it where you can disarm people.
Yeah.
You know, by being different and making them laugh. But sometimes I'm like, I don't need to be the person that changes your mind.
Ambassador for it. You know?
I don't need that. I mean,
My lads, I say they're from Gravesend. Because I used to say to them, look, if there's any problems, you come and talk to me. This is the relationship we have. Because I didn't really have that with my dad. He's a good guy, but I didn't have that connection with him. So I try not to have that with my boys. And I remember saying to them, if it turns out, you know, that you're gay or whatever, we can talk about it and it's going to be fine. I remember my eldest turned around and saying to me, and he goes, Dad, for the last time, I'm not gay. Stop banging on about it. But because I knew people that were gay and knew their stories and the shit that they'd gone through. Right.
Do you think they had the conversation where they go, we have to bust it to Dad that we're
maybe
not gay.
Maybe Dad's gay.
He's going to be so disappointed.
His dad's going to be disappointed I'm not gay. Yeah.
Well, it was funny when I worked in the gay sauna
in a gay sauna?
Yeah, I worked in Rochester, in Kent, funnily enough.
Fucking hell, imagine being gay in Rochester.
And it was, someone made a joke the other day, and he said, it's a bit quiet at the gay sauna this morning. Oh yeah, well the dads are with the kids, aren't they, at Thorpe Park. Really made me laugh. I was like, that's exactly what it was. It was men that hadn't come out, that were married.
Yeah, of course.
And they were going down there to just have fun with men.
It's just tragic, isn't it? It's really sad.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think, obviously I know my boys aren't going to have to worry about coming out to us. Mum, Dad, there's no dad here. I've told you before. they're not going to have to worry about that.
No.
But, you know, and again, it's in my own little echo chamber, but fortunately, because, you know, all our mates.
Yeah.
You know, are the same, aren't they? Their children are gay. No one's going to go, I can't believe it. I feel terrible for you. We'll be like, yeah, cool, all right, that's fine. Anyway, what do you want for dinner?
Well, later on as well, when they come of age, society will have changed by then as well. We will move further along as well. So
by the time my kids are my age, they're going to be like, explain to me, why was it a problem that you were gay again? I hope.
I hope.
I mean, the other thing is, that's what I hope, but the other thing is the way we're heading, everything's getting more right wing, it could easily go the other way, and then all these sort of rights and privileges that we've got as, you know, gay people, or the few privileges that people have as people of colour, will just fucking go.
Very true. Well, the guy in Brunei that's brought in the...
Oh, the stoning.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's absolutely nuts and that's a news agenda, isn't it? That gets reported and then it just brings it back to you. You've got to explain this to your children.
Well, someone posted a picture of his car.
Yeah, it's the gayest thing you've ever seen.
Gayest Rolls Royce. Yeah. It looked like Penelope Pitstop's car with these umbrellas on it. And
Frankie Boyle's got a great joke. He's like, Sultan of Brunei sounds like some sort of Glaswegian drag act.
Sultan of Brunei! Hey, that's right!
He's obviously, you know, he's got his own issues, he doesn't want anyone to know.
Oh, he's a
about.
Massive bender.
Of course he is. Of course
he's
he is.
He's a massive bender. And it's just like, mate, just accept your like cock and let's all move on.
And you imagine the world would be such a better place.
Your fucking Diamante car and your bloody turban and tell me you're not gay.
Putin as well, they say Putin's gay as well, don't they?
Oh, Putin definitely likes cock. I bet he's a massive top as well, isn't he?
Do you think he's a top?
He's a bottom.
Someone who craves, who wants to be seen as that powerful.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, he
really
takes
likes
it.
The pounding.
Of course he does. Yeah. There's a letterbox all day long.
Of course, unfortunately, everyone that fucks him gets murdered straight after.
Exactly, yes, there's no evidence.
Yeah. You will have to die.
Oh, I'm like a black widow, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I really want to do this, but
just
I know
like
it's going to be bad
men
for
just
me.
In a fucking... I don't know why I'm laughing about this. I mean, clearly it's a joke. Before anyone was like, you're laughing about men being murdered.
It's not... So your partner was the biological mum?
Yeah, so she had them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that a conversation?
It was a conversation, but it was a quick one.
Yeah.
Do you want to? Okay.
I'm not fucking doing it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was 37.
Right.
And I just thought, I just thought it's going to be tricky for me. And I think it would have been tricky for me, as I am I'm pretty much perimenopausal now.
Cool
times. I mean, all the men listening to this going, right, first of all, we're listening to fucking feminism, and now she's banging on about fucking the menopause.
Yeah, but this is why these men listen, the men listening, we are, this is why we're having these conversations, so we understand.
Well, for any men listening, you don't know what the perimenopause is. It's just, it's the bit before the menopause, and every woman goes through it, and, you know, it's, it can be 10 years
right.
that it takes, wow. and then before your periods finally stop. And in that time, women can be moody and have hot flushes and have, I mean, like the amount of symptoms that come with it are like...
Some of them can be debilitating.
They are,
well,
like, you know, mental health problems. Some women, you get insomnia and night sweats is normal, very common. As well as hot flushes, they're different. Night sweats, you're drenched in sweat. Hot flushes, you feel like you're being microwaved. There's just it's debilitating, and it can actually make it almost impossible to do anything.
When my mum was going through it, and she was just in tears, just in a ball on the floor.
I mean, people are like quite down on HRT, but I'm like the second I feel like I need it, I'm going to fucking bang on it because I stick that patch on.
See, definitely. I don't have to worry about it. I get to, I'm in the middle of it now, so I just get to buy a Ferrari and leather jacket.
Don't men get like some sort of hormonal fucking, do you not get anything at all? Do not men like get to like 50, 60 and then like your balls bang against your knees and then something happens and
you get
a prolapse.
Everything just falls out.
Yeah, everything just falls out of your ass.
Gravity just gives up. Your balls get low. Your arsehole falls out. There's your privilege, your prick.
A lot of stuff does go wrong.
Speaking
as the oldest person in the room, I've been talking to Meg Matthews about the menopause for.
All right, mate. We're all busy.
Yeah, all right.
But it's for another podcast project,
mate.
Yeah, sorry, Rich, I'm leaving you.
Unbelievable.
She was highlighting the lack of information as well, and the it's still kind of seen as shameful.
There's a taboo, and I talked about it in my last show. I did a big chunk about the menopause in my last show because of that, and it's women not talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because... One of the ways that women are judged, apart from how, you know, how we look and how slim we are, how young we are, how beautiful we are, whatever it is, how fertile we are, our fertility. And let's not forget that you know, obviously a man can, you know, procreate well into his 70s.
Look at Des O'Connor.
Yeah, as long as you can get an erection, you can pretty much like, you know, have kids. And there's something about women losing part of their identity or part of their sexuality or part of their attraction. Like, I've got a friend of mine and she's a few years older than me, and I was like, she was like going through the menopause, and I was like, do you talk about it? She was like, I would never talk about it with anyone. No. I'm gay, she's bisexual, and she was like, I can't talk about the men. I want to get a bloke. I want to date a man. Can't be banging on about
that. As soon as you say the menopause.
Because as soon as you say that, he's going to be like thinking, imagine you've like got some sort of dried up vagina and...
Like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and like you're...
Like you're over, you're done.
But...
And it's madness.
But do you... I mean, like, by the time you get to your 40s and 50s, do you want children? No, you don't.
No.
And also, for me, it's not the end of something. It's the beginning of something. It's the beginning of a newfound freedom for women that, you know, where you're not... constantly being like, you know, fucking, like your hormones aren't constantly in control of your emotions, where you can finally let all of that go. And I think a lot of women find a new lease of life. It's not unusual to hear about women getting to their 50s and 60s and they're just reinventing themselves. And that's all part of the menopause. And what would be great is for women in their 40s and 50s who are perimenopausal, would be nice if someone went... You know that thing that that's normal.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And also GPs aren't trained in it.
Really?
No, they're given no training. So if you go, I mean, that might have changed recently, but, you know, when I went to the doctors like 3 or 4 years ago about it, they were like, you know, when I was like 41 or something, they were like, you're too young.
Wow.
You're just too young, so it's not happening. And I went, but it just is happening.
Yeah.
They were like, well, you're too young. And they said, when did your mum's period stop? And I was like, 48? And then she went, right, well, still, have your period stopped? I went, no, but something terrible is happening to my body and I would like to know a bit more about it. And she was like, well, there's nothing we can do, so you better just ride it out.
Wow.
And I was like, flipping heck.
Yeah.
This is, and she was, that was a female GP.
Yeah, right. Who should herself understand, at least.
Somebody, yeah, but she, I just don't think women, you know, and also there is the argument, again, where we say, look, you know, if men had the menopause, we'd know everything about it.
Of course
we'd know every last thing about it, but there's no research done into it because it's just women's stuff. We don't need to all know about that. They'll deal with it.
Ah, she's just being moody again.
What a moody prick, yeah.
A bit, open the window then, stop moaning. Yeah.
I know. But can you imagine coming to work in a place like this, for example, it's quite a sort of trendy place, and then suddenly you're drenched in sweat, and people are thinking, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And then you say, I'm going through the menopause. People back away from you.
Yeah. Right, I've had it on stage, where I've been on stage, and then suddenly I get this really bad hot flush, and I am literally drenched in sweat. And it's really hard. Most of the time I think the audience don't really notice. They just think, oh, the lights are really hot. But like when you've got sweat in your eyes, and it makes me feel really nauseous and my head spins. So I'm discombobulated. I'm like, really know what's going on. But stand up, you've got to be quick. Yeah, yeah. So you've got to find, and a couple of times I mentioned it, and it kills the room. Sorry, I'm just having a hot flush. They're like, what are you talking about? Oh, not women's stuff.
Yeah, you know. I've seen it when I've seen other female comedians talking about their dried up old fanny, and you sit in the room going like that, ugh. And you're going, but that's, I've just watched another comic talking about his long nuts. So,
you can have dick jokes all day long, but you can't talk about your foof because people don't like it. But also, to bring it back to my boys, is also just for them to know. I don't want to scare them, but I want them to know about things like periods, and I want them to know about how women's bodies work, and I want them to just have a bit of awareness about their body and about girls' bodies, and also talk to them. So in talking about that, then also talk about things like consent.
Yeah.
But not just talking about consent. So making them understand about consent about their own body. Mm. You know, because you hear about like that Michael Jackson whole thing.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like none of us are surprised, but when you get to when you hear the actual stories, I just want my children to know that their bodies are their bodies, and no one else is allowed to touch them.
Yeah.
And if someone does that, you can say no, and that's the end of it. And then I think once we teach children about consent, then we can teach them about. Then it makes more sense when you go, and you know what I said about your body?
Yeah.
Well, that applies to her body or his body.
Yeah.
You don't have any rights over that person.
No.
They have to give you that consent.
Yeah.
And if they are asleep or they are drunk or they can't give you that consent, then you just, you wait.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's funny, going back to that, goes back to the privilege of recognising your own privilege, because I understand about consent. People I'm friends with know about understand consent. It's not something that, it was only recently sort of like it blew my mind that there are men out there that don't get it. Don't get it. Like, oh, she's a bit pissed. Oh, that's all right. She'd be easier to, and you're like, what do you mean? No.
Did you see that George Galloway YouTube clip?
No.
Fucking hell. Have a look at that when he talks about the whole Julian Assange thing.
Yeah, right.
And how it's like, these women consented and, once we said something about once there's penetration, then that is consent. And it's like,
what?
No, penetration is not consent.
No.
Penetration, just because you've stuck your dick in, that is not what consent is.
It's not like a key in a lock. Well, it's open.
Yeah.
Off we go.
I've been in once. Surely I can always go in.
Yeah.
No, mate.
No, of course not. It has to be consensual. Every single time.
If she's asleep and she wakes up and you're banging her and she's like, I didn't consent to this, it doesn't matter if she consented to it earlier.
No.
She didn't consent to it then. The fact that you even happen to have to have it. I mean, honestly, oh God, that man is vile. Isn't he?
I know, but this is I've heard of a couple of people in our industry about things that they've done in the past, and it makes it difficult. Because it's like, what do you do? I've heard what I've heard, because I've only heard it, I've heard it from the actual people it happened to, but they don't want to come out and admit what's going on. So I'm like, I now have this information. And I'm like, right, what do I do?
I think I've got the same information as you.
Probably have. And you're like,
Can't do anything.
You can't, can you?
Because then you're going against.
They don't want to.
Also I understand why, because there's a power dynamic in our industry whereby, you know, there are very powerful men that hold all the cards, and you're a lowly open mic act you're starting out in the business and you're not, and you accuse him of assault or rape, then that could be your career over. That's all you're known for. Oh, you're that woman that he raped or allegedly raped. Then you open yourself up to people calling you a liar, saying it never happened. He'll turn around and say it never happened. So then immediately people will get behind him.
Yeah.
And then you're on a hide into nowhere.
Yeah, and you're the only person that loses out is you, and then they get to continue.
And also, how do you prove it?
Yeah.
It just becomes about he said, she said, and he... You know, she can't win.
No.
So I don't blame her, but I do think I did. In Edinburgh, there was a basically they got all the stories of female comedians who'd been assaulted by men on the circuit, and other comedians, other women, read out their stories. Right. So I read out someone else's story that wasn't, you know, it wasn't mine, and some of the stories were.
Wow.
I mean, one of the stories was about a woman. Anyway, I won't talk about it because it's really bringing the mood down. But it was just I'm quite hard to shock, but I was so shocked I couldn't stop thinking about it for months. I was like, who is this bloke?
Yeah.
I want to know who he is. I'm gonna fucking kill him.
Yeah.
But you know,
at least whose thing you were reading out?
No. Oh, I see. No, and it was read. I didn't read that one out. It was JoJo Sutherland read it out, and she was reading it out. She was in tears as she read it. And we were all like, it was really powerful. But what was terrifying is that I said to Samina, this bloke, is he still working? She went, I can't tell you anything about him. And I went, but you can tell me if he's still working. You can tell me that. She went, I can't tell you anything about him.
Fuck me.
And I was like, right, so he does still work on the circuit. And she went, well, I can't tell you anything about him.
Ugh.
But I was like, but I kind of got from her vibe that it was like, yeah, he's
still around.
A very prominent, successful male comic. And you know, it's just so like disheartening.
Yeah.
And also I also feel with the Me Too thing that I kind of sidestepped a lot of it because I'm gay. So a lot of I didn't get a lot of the if you fuck me I'll give you this or
no.
And also I think just because I'm a bit older and because I look like the kind of person that would lamp you if you touched me. which I would.
When I first met you, you used to scare me.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm such a softie.
When we first, a couple of times we met, and I remember thinking, she's scary.
Marcus Birdman said to me years ago, he said, people are saying nice things about you in the green room. And I said, oh, that's so lovely. And he said, yeah, they didn't used to. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a real moody, aggressive woman. I had a real attitude.
Yeah, maybe that was
I
that.
Did. Oh, yeah. I totally did. Yeah. That angry leather.
That was me. That was my own prejudice coming out.
No,
just
man.
An angry
leather. I think that was true. I think that probably was quite true.
Well, I suppose maybe that came from, because, you know, I've been in the industry since 2001 when I was a barman. And then, so I've been aware that it's been a very masculine environment. You know, I mean, even the middle spot was called the girl spot.
It still is.
Is it really?
It's still called the girl spot.
For fuck's sake. So I can imagine that maybe that your attitude at the beginning.
Possibly, I think it was it was just stuff that was going through at the time, and I carried a lot of anger around, and it was, I don't know if it had anything to do with stand-up, but it just had to do with me, and, you know, I carried it everywhere in the green rooms, and often if blokes were rude to me, rather than now, I'd just sort of roll my eyes or ignore them or go, or I'd say, mate, come on, I would just get into it. I'd go 0 to 100.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, what did you say to me? Do you want to say, come outside and say that to me? As if I mean, look at my wrists. If I hit anyone, they'd be like, sorry, I barely felt that, mate. But I carried so much visceral anger that people were like, God, get away from that mad leather, you know. And I think, I don't think it was... and I do think that kind of... You've got to be careful of that, because you don't want to be the person that nobody wants to be with in the green room.
No,
and there are comedians that have that.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty. But that, it was never, I don't want to be around that person. It was all like, just a bit wary.
You know? She looks like she could be tasty, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I've had it, talking about men doing things to women, I got involved with someone who I shouldn't have done. I was with somebody else. And it got to the, I was getting, like, she'd ring up and go, you're going to come and see me today? And I was like, no, look, we have to, let's not do this anymore because it's shit. She's like, if you don't come and see me, I'm going to tell her. So I was getting that side of things. And I take responsibility for being in that situation in the first place. And, you know, I take that. But because it was a woman, no one says, everyone just goes, well, you were the bloke in it, so it's clearly all your fault. Do you know what I mean? No one sees it. No one goes, I'm like, look, I got into it with somebody and it turns out that it got really messy really quickly. And I could see that it wasn't doing either of us any favours. Keep doing this. It was fun to start with, you know. There was stuff I hadn't dealt with in my own life, which is why I was doing this. And I really liked this person as well. But then it started getting shitty and it was like, look, this isn't doing us either of us any good. Let's just be mates and, you know.
When we look at that, you were talking about that pendulum earlier, the way things go, whether it be societally or whether it be whatever, between couples or whether it be between humans or whatever. And, you know, affairs end.
Mm.
They do. Yeah. And often when they end, they are really messy.
Yeah.
Which is why they should be avoided at all costs.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because they're inherently toxic.
Yeah.
But equally... You know, I've done it. You know, I'm not perfect.
No.
And you know, you do it, and you think, "Fuck, that was a terrible decision I made." And I can honestly say, you know, because it's two women, there's one of us is a prick here.
Yeah, right.
It's usually me. So you know, there probably is a little bit of that. And you know, women all, you know, like, and I do it with my friends. Like, if she's like, this guy, and he said this to me, and I'm like, oh, all men are bastards.
Yeah.
You know, of course we do that. And because we're sizing with our.
Well, all men are bastards, and all women are nutters. I think it just underlines how complex human beings are on all sides. It isn't just men or women.
No.
It's batshit that we exist in the first place.
It is, and with all things is that, like, we have, you know, people are always trying to go, you know, what are women like? What are men like? Fucking women, fucking men.
Yeah.
But we've got way more in common than we don't.
Of course we do, yeah. You know, absolutely.
I know there's no comedy going, look what we've got in common. Of course the comedy comes from, she loves scattered cushions and candles. You know, that's way more, you know, of course, I get it.
You know, been down a pub with his friends.
That's it, yeah.
But... there's way more that connects us that doesn't, and irrespective of gender or sexuality, and the thing that's what I want to give to my children is that stop looking at the difference. Stop when you go into it. I don't want my kids to go into any situation and go, what is different here?
Yeah.
What? There's something different about you. You look different. Man. You've got different skin. You've got a different gender. You're born a bloke, but you're now a woman. What the fuck? You know, I want people to go in, what is it that connects us?
Yeah.
What is it that we have in common? And we've always got more in common. And comedy is a perfect example of that. You get a room full of people, you make that room full of people and laugh. That's what we've got in common.
Yeah, man.
We've got all of that humanity in the room. That is why, as comedians, when we do something and everyone's laughing and there is like that energy and we're like, fucking hell, I'm a god. It's because in that moment, you are a god because you've connected all of these people that think that they have nothing in common with each other, and all of a sudden, they have this.
That's right.
They have laughter in common, and it's just such a unifying thing. And I know as comedians, we're constantly undermining what we do as a job, and I'm really guilty of that. So I don't fucking do it.
But
what we do is something really special, especially, I've only started thinking about it now, is in a time where we're so divided that we can be the people that unify 450 people in a room, even if it's only for 20 minutes. Yeah. Not everyone. There's always going to be someone that hates you. But fuck him.
Yeah. Oh. Or her. But that was it. That was lovely. That was really cool.
Oh,
thank you so much.
No, genuinely thank you for asking me on. I don't... I'm not often allowed to talk about stuff like this without people. Normally, when I do this, my girlfriend gets up and walks away.
But this is why, because I'm, like I say, I'm still learning as well. So.
We're all learning.
Yeah, exactly. So having conversations with someone like yourself, someone listening to this will then get more of an understanding of, you know, a different life that isn't theirs.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So. Yeah, so thank you.
Thanks,
really
Rich.
Appreciate it. Cheers.
Insane in the membrane.
So there we are, that was Jen Brister. Fantastic. Again, a brilliant guest, a brilliant human being. I love Jen very, very much. She's excellent. She's also got a book to plug, and we're going to talk about that now. The Other Mother, it's called. It's a funny, irreverent, and honest take on what it's like to be the other parent. Published on the 5th of September. So get onto that. Pre-orders are already up on Amazon, I believe. I had a look myself, and they're up there, so get onto that. And next time, I have a chinwag with the mighty Scroobius Pip. Have you always been confident?
No, no, not at all. I'm the kid in school with a stutter. That's literally the first victim that they called in the register, and you can't speak. And you start at a school, everyone, quite rightfully, is looking for someone to bully. And that sounds horrible, but you don't want to be the one being bullied.
Of course
not. So you need someone else to be a victim. And if the first thing they do is call a register, and the first thing I can't do is speak, then easily I'm that guy.
Thanks to Comedy Central once again for the venue. Thank you to Zen on Gaku for the wonderful music. Jade Adams again for everything in between. My producer is Paul Daniels, the mighty Paul Daniels. Yes, Paul Daniels at darkhorsedigital.co.uk. I've been Rich Wilson, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.